Speak in the name of one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Please be seated. This is my very favorite Peter reading. Truth be told, I wait 3 years for this reading to come back. It appears every 3 years in our lectionary. I wasn't at St. Paul's the last time this reading came up. I started in September of 2021. This reading comes in, you know, late February, early March of 2021. So you guys have never actually heard this part of this reading from me, but this is my very, very, very favorite Peter reading. And as you probably know, Peter is my favorite disciple. I will say Thomas is making a run for it this year with some of the questions that he asks. But overall, in general, if I had to pick one, it would be Peter. And the main reason I like Peter is because he just gets it wrong most of the time. And the other thing I love about Peter is he has these really funny one-liners that happen in throughout all of the Gospels. And I just feel like Peter is somewhat a little bit of all of us, where we get it wrong. Sometimes we get it right, but sometimes we say things that are really funny. And sometimes we say things that are really funny and they're unintentionally funny. And I just really love Peter. Amy Jill Levine, who's a pretty famous Jewish theologian, she talks about both Judaism and Christianity, says that when you read the Bible in its entirety, it should elicit all human emotions. That from Genesis to Revelation, to the beginning, to the very last book of the Bible, you should experience all human emotions when you read it. You should have very depressing lows where you are crying your eyes out and sobbing to the point where you can't breathe, and you should have very joyous highs, and there should be everything in between, including rolling on the floor laughing because something happened that was just so funny you cannot contain yourself. And for me, this reading from Peter is rolling on the floor laughing. And that's mainly because I can just picture the conversation between Jesus and Peter, where Jesus is saying to people, and he's been saying it quite openly for several weeks now, that he's going to go to Jerusalem, and that the people in Jerusalem want him dead, that they are going to arrest him and kill him. And he's saying this over and over and over again. And then he says to his disciples, let's go to Jerusalem. And Peter takes him aside, and he says, I don't know, Jesus, that sounds like a really terrible idea. How about we don't go to the place where they want you killed? We can just stay here next to this really nice Sea of Galilee lake. We can catch some great fish in the morning and enjoy them for dinner in the afternoon. Just thinking out loud here, maybe we don't go to the place that you say people want to kill you. Maybe we just like hang out here and do great ministry together. And furthermore, Jesus, if you're trying to get more people to follow you, telling them how you're about to die and that they're going to die along with you, not a great way to do it. Maybe like, don't do that, Jesus. And I love it because Peter's 100% right. Maybe don't go to the place that people want you killed. If your goal is to stay alive, Jerusalem's not a great place to go. And you don't have to go there, Jesus. It's not like in the 21st century where you can get there in a few hours in a car. You gotta walk for days to get to Jerusalem. You have to make a conscious choice. Like, you could just not go. The people from Jerusalem aren't gonna send an army to find you over here in Capernaum. You could just stay safe here next to this beautiful sea and enjoy the great weather. And I love it because Peter is so right. And so Peter starts by rebuking Jesus and saying, Jesus, that's just not a good idea. Let's not do it. Let's not talk like that. And then Jesus rebukes Peter and says, get behind me, Satan. And in our reading that we read today, we heard the word rebuke twice. But in the greater context of where this verse sits in the chapters of Mark, there are two additional rebukes that happen. So directly before our reading today, what happens is Jesus asks his disciples, who do people say that I am? And they say, well, some say you're Elijah, and others Moses, and others John the Baptist, and others just say you're a prophet. And then Jesus says, but who do you say that I am? And Peter answers, and he gets it right. Peter says, you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who is coming into the world. And then Jesus sternly orders him not to tell anyone. But that word sternly orders, when you see it in the original Greek, it can be translated as sternly orders, or it can be translated as rebukes. And here it's translated as sternly orders, but the next time it appears, it'll be translated as rebukes. So Jesus rebukes Peter and says, don't tell anyone that I'm the Son of God. And then we have our reading today where right after Jesus says, you're the Son of God, Jesus says, well, let's go to Jerusalem where I'm gonna be killed. And Peter says, bad idea, Jesus. And Jesus says, nope, we're gonna go. Get behind me, Satan, take up your cross and follow me. And then immediately what happens after this reading is in a couple of days, that's the way the next verse starts, Jesus is gonna take with him Simon Peter, Andrew, James, and John up high upon a mountain and be transfigured before them. This is literally what happens about 24 hours prior to the transfiguration. And if you remember, when they're coming off the mountain of the transfiguration, Jesus sternly orders or rebukes them to not tell anyone anything that they have seen until after he has risen from the dead. So in a matter of just a couple of verses, you have the word rebuke four times. And Peter is a part of all of them. Peter is getting rebuked quite a bit, but there is one time where Peter rebukes Jesus. And I like that Peter rebukes Jesus because I think it speaks to their relationship, where Peter feels comfortable enough to rebuke Jesus. That there is a friendship between Jesus and Peter, and Jesus and all of the disciples, and Peter and all of the disciples, where Peter feels like he can tell his friend, that's a bad idea. Let's not do that. And then Jesus can take it under advisement. He doesn't listen, for the record. Spoiler alert, Jesus does go to Jerusalem. He doesn't listen to what Peter has to say, but he hears his rebuke. And then I want to talk about the part where Jesus says to him, get behind me, Satan, because it just seems overly harsh when Peter makes a very valid point. Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. If you remember last week, the gospel reading from last week, and it's always the first gospel reading in the season of Lent, Jesus is driven out into the wilderness. He has a baptism, he emerges from the baptism, and then he is driven out into the wilderness. And in Mark's gospel, it says that he's there with the wild beast, he's being tempted by Satan, and the angels waited on him. In other versions of it, between Matthew and Luke, you hear the dialogue between Jesus and Satan, where Jesus is tempted by Satan over three temptations, and he rebukes all of those temptations. And then in Matthew's version, after Jesus has been tempted by the devil and he's emerging from the wilderness, we are told that the devil departed Jesus to return at a more opportune time, meaning that that was not the last or only time Jesus would be tempted by the devil. The devil will come back and tempt Jesus at other points in his life. Most notably, Jesus is tempted in the Garden of Gethsemane on that last day of Jesus' life. After the institution of Holy Communion, the Last Supper, he's dined with his friends, he goes out, he takes his disciples with him, they're in the garden, they're praying, the disciples can't stay awake, and Jesus keeps saying, like, could you not just wait 1 hour and pray with me? But they're too tired, they keep falling asleep. And Jesus is so stressed that he is praying and he's literally sweating blood. And he prays to God, take this cup from me. Take this cup from me. Do not let what is about to happen happen. Anything but this. Remove this cup from me. And then a little bit later, he prays, but let it be your will and not my will, God. And then you see it again in the trial of Jesus, where Pilate says to him, answer my questions. Do you not understand? I have the authority to crucify you or to release you. And Jesus responds back to Pilate, you have no authority over me. I am here because I have laid down my authority. And the only reason you have the power to crucify me or release me is because I have given it to you. We see the temptation of Jesus during the garden and during his trial. But I would argue that we see the temptation of Jesus here in this interaction between Peter and Jesus. Because Peter makes a great point. You don't have to go to Jerusalem, Jesus. We can just stay here. We can cure the people, we can cast out demons, we can go from city to city, we can do great work and great ministry right here. We don't actually need to go to Jerusalem. And then Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. You're setting your mind on earthly things, not on divine things. Our theology in the Episcopal Church is that Jesus is fully divine and fully human. And we focus a lot on the divinity of Jesus, and rightfully so. There wouldn't be a church if there wasn't the divinity of Jesus. But sometimes we forget about the humanity of Jesus, that Jesus was also a human with all human emotions, including fear. And I think when Peter says to him, Jesus, let's not go. Let's stay here where it is nice and safe. I think there's a human part of Jesus that wants to stay and says, yeah, let's stay. Let's do the ministry here. But then Jesus has to rebuke that temptation and that temptation from the devil to say, get behind me, Satan. We are going to go to Jerusalem. We're going to do the things that God requires of us, even when it is really, really hard to do. I don't think Jesus is calling Peter Satan here. I think he's calling his temptation to stay where it is safe and where he is welcomed and loved, and people hunt after him because he can heal them and cure them, and he has fame spreading throughout the region. I think he's calling that temptation Satan. So my question for all of us as we're entering into the season of Lent is, what is our Jerusalem? Where are we called to go and maybe don't want to? And for all of us, I pray that our Jerusalem does not end the same way Jesus' Jerusalem did. I'm hoping the stakes are significantly lower than that. But I think all of us have experienced a call from Jesus that is difficult and hard to do. And we want to stay in Capernaum where the weather is nice. We've got a great look at a sea. And we don't have to do the hard things. And we can stay and try and talk ourselves into doing great ministry where we are. But maybe God is calling us to go somewhere new. Somewhere that we don't particularly want to be. Somewhere that is hard and risky to go to. What is that place? And the second part of that is that when Jesus tells his disciples and he says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan," and he goes to Jerusalem, he sets his face and he literally starts walking towards Jerusalem, Peter goes. Peter follows him to Jerusalem. All of the disciples do. Every single one of them goes to Jerusalem. They follow him to the very end. And yes, in the last 24 to 12 hours of Jesus' life, they will all in their own way desert Jesus and abandon him. That is true. But their fear got the better of them at that moment. But they all come back. And all of the disciples reform the church after Jesus' death. So my question for us is, what is our Jerusalem? Where do we not want to go? Can we go there as a church community with a support and prayer and love of one another? And can we trust that when we get there, Jesus will be there? And that somehow the scary part of Jerusalem, the place that we don't want to go, will be even better than the safety of the sea. Amen.